The closing market report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming on AM 580 as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists, on the web at a6395.com and at agrigold.com.
Welcome to the Closing Market Report. It's August the 24th, 2006. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker of AgriVisor Services in Bloomington, Illinois. And we'll discuss the cash grain market today with Bill Mayer. He's at the Grain Elevator located in Lexington. In agricultural news, WRDA, WRDA, is riding high and the push is on to finally get the locks and dams on the upper Mississippi and Illinois rivers updated. And Canada has found another BSE-positive cow. We'll have details of these and other stories shortly. Also this half hour, we'll hear a commentary from the Farm Bureau, and we'll update the latest returns from the John Deere Pro Farmer Midwest Crop Tour. And don't forget that just after the bottom of the hour, meteorologist Peter Levitt will join us for a complete look at today's agricultural weather forecast.
Agricultural information on AM 580 is made possible with support from Lincoln Land Agri Energy in Palestine, Illinois, producing a renewable fuel with corn bought directly from the farmer. More information at 800-586-2321 or online at lincolnlandagrienergy.com.
Taking a look now at the numbers from the Chicago Board of Trade on this Thursday afternoon. Futures in the wheat pit finished 9.5 cents higher. The September at 375.5 for the day. And the December contract at 395.75, up 8.75. September corn futures at 227.5 were up 4. December at 244.25, up 4.25. And the March contract at 258.5, up 4 cents for the day. December futures at 295.25 were up 5.25. September soybeans, 551.5, down 3/4. November's at 565 were off 1.5. And the January futures at 578 were down 1.25 for the day. November beans for next year at 625.5, down 1.75. Bean meal futures, September's at 161.80. They were up 210. The bean oil down 54 at 24.98. Over at the Mercantile Exchange, August feeder cattle, 116.25, up 35. August live cattle at 88.12.5, were up 92.5. And the October live cattle, 87.5 cents higher at 92.32.5. Lean hogs finished the October contract at $66.42.5 for the afternoon.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Joining us now to take a look at what happened to the Chicago Board of Trade and the Mercantile Exchange is Dan Zwicker of AgriVisor Services out of Bloomington, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Dan.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Let's start this afternoon in at the Mercantile Exchange, where it appears they simply ignored the BSE positive cow that has come out of Canada as of late yesterday afternoon.
Well, they may have done it today. We'll have to kind of see, you know, what happens over the longer pull. But we've had so much talk of that I think everybody's kind of grown a little immune to it, and we'll just kind of wait and see kind of what happens, I guess, over the long pull. But at least initially, they took it relatively mild in here, and pretty well. We'll have to kind of see how this thing all unfolds, though.
As we take a look at what's been happening in the Merc, are you suggesting that those who own animals lock in prices for bean meal and corn at this time?
I'm not too sure they need to get too aggressive on soybean meal. I do think, meal is at a pretty good price, but you know, trying to book in a whole bunch of it or long term, I don't know if I'd get too anxious of that. I think probably by October 1st, one probably needs to have a sizable portion of his meal need. But I think at the moment, I think I would probably be a little patient on corn. I do think that, you know, they need to have as much cash ownership as they possibly can for storage. If they are looking ahead longer term, a person might want to lock into some of these futures contracts. I'm not too sure I'd get 2 days up here to get you too excited, but I think if December corn does start closing above the 250 area, I think that is a signal that the underlying fundamental picture would at least warrant some extended or distant type coverages. But I do think livestock producers do have to take a look at, you know, locking in their feed grain needs.
You mentioned 2 days up. As you take a look at the numbers for the December contract, what would be a confirmation that a bottom has been put in?
Well, I guess I'm probably, it depends on what kind of bottom you're talking about. I mean, we do have a bottom in place. The question is that a long-lasting bottom, or how soon will we go back to visit it, if we visit it? We started out, I would have liked to have seen more of a reversal type action. Would have went lower on Monday, went below last week's low, and then now we're closing higher for the week. Instead, we had that little reversal on Friday, and then the market started climbing out of the chute here Monday. So we did not go down and penetrate the previous week's low, but the fact that we did go above the previous week's high, I think, is a strong indication that we've put in a fairly meaningful bottom. I don't know if we got to get some fundamental confirmations yet, but I think chart-wise, I want to call it a 20-week cycle low. We've been due. It kind of pretty well came in right on the money. The 7-week cycle also came in at the money. So that does look pretty good to me that we're at least in a up wave in here over the next 3 to 4 weeks, or maybe at least into the first half of September, and depending upon what early yield results and what the fundamentals are. At that time, it could be extended a little higher.
Given the narrowing of the basis last week, would you call this a cash-driven rally, and is that different than something else in terms of maybe the traders just deciding that the crop's not there?
It's a combination of things, but the fact that the basis started improving prior to the futures rally, I think, is a good sign of end-user ownership interest. And for the most part, the trade is prepared, I think, for a big crop. Everybody wants to buy a deep discount to cash, fill their bins and hedge it up, and let the basis narrow and earn carry. And I think that alone has kind of laid the groundwork for actually the market to almost go opposite of last year. I think basis levels could continue to show firmness as we go into harvest. I think the futures market might stay relatively firm, might even be in a sideways to higher market also. So, you know, I think the groundwork has been laid for the low that we put in here last week as an early seasonal low, and now we're in a sideways to higher climb into the fall. If we're going to come down and check this low out for a solid low, I think that's going to come sometime in late October, early November, and a lot of that will depend upon, how big the crop is, and that'll be the time when, you know, storage becomes a problem. But I think initially here, storage is not going to be much of a problem to start the harvest out.
You know, if everybody puts this crop away and throws away the key and waits for next spring, does that mean there could be a pretty decent rally in December, January time frame?
Well, everybody's not going to do everything the same. And, you know, people do need cash flow. People don't have storage for everything type thing. But I don't know if I want to quite – that reminds me of going back to the NFO holding actions. That didn't necessarily work too good back in the 60s. But I do think it tells you that the market may have to bid up to get some ownership of this grain. Depending upon what farmers' cash flow needs are. But you got to keep in mind, a lot of these farmers need their cash flow early, late in the fall, because all of their decisions and a lot of their input discounts are all done before the end of the year. So the end of the year is a big cash flow need. So there's going to be some inventory that's going to be moved. There's already been inventory sold to be moved in the fall. So it's not going to be quite as simple as that, Todd. But I think, you know, there is interest in owning cash inventory on ideas that the expanding ethanol market could send this stuff sharply higher sometime next year.
Anything else to add before I let you go for the
That's
day?
That's about it.
All right. Thanks much, Dan. Dan Zwicker of AgriVisor Services out of Bloomington, Illinois, joins us here on the Closing Mark Report on Thursday afternoons.
The Carl Center for Rural Health and Farm Safety, a division of Carl Foundation Hospital, is proud to underwrite agricultural programming at WILL. The center helps residents of rural communities with education and training in farm safety. For more information, call 217-383-4606.
Agricultural meteorologist Peter Levitt will join us for a complete look at the agricultural weather forecast. Our own Ed Kieser says tonight across the two-state region, in the far north, it'll be mostly cloudy, some scattered showers, a few thunderstorms, says Ed. Elsewhere, clear to partly cloudy. Lows will range this evening from 62 in eastern Indiana to around 70 in western Illinois. Tomorrow, Ed says, in northwestern Illinois, partly sunny with a chance of showers, a few thunderstorms late in the day. Elsewhere, partly to mostly sunny, very warm and humid. Highs will range from 85 in northern Indiana to 92 in the south. In today's agricultural news, the eighth Canadian case of BSE has been confirmed. The Canadian Food Inspection Agency has announced that final test of confirmed BSE in a mature beef cow from Alberta. The case marks Canada's eighth since the first native-born case in 2003. According to the CFIA, preliminary information indicates the animal was between 8 and 10 years of age. Therefore, they suspect the exposure to BSE likely occurred before the implementation of the Canadian beef ban or in the early years of its implementation. The CFIA notes no part of the animal's carcass entered the human food or animal systems. Well, WERDA is riding high. The push is on to get Congress to complete action on the long-sought legislation to overhaul America's water infrastructure, including locks and dams on the upper Mississippi and Illinois rivers. In fact, just before the August congressional recess, House Transportation Chairman Don Young said he wanted the so-called WERDA bill done before the November elections. Well, National Corn Growers Association Director of Public Policy Lisa Kelly says staffers are working over the break to ready the competing House and Senate versions for a September negotiation and a vote.
Over the course of August recess, staff has met and gone through the bills, doing a walkthrough side by side, comparing what similarities are in the bill and then what challenges lay ahead as far as negotiations go.
Since the Senate bill was passed after Hurricanes Katrina and Rita, Kelly notes it deals with storm issues, unlike the House version passed more than a year ago. The Senate version also includes some controversial Army Corps reforms that could slow or kill some projects. NCGA is pushing to have those provisions improved or stripped out of the bill. Then Kelly says the corn growers hope to see Congress vote on that bill before adjourning in early October to campaign for elections.
This is a very contentious election, and you've got thousands of people predicting how the outcomes are going to play out. But if either the House or the Senate were to flip and change parties, you're probably not going to see anything happen.
Considering unfinished appropriations bills that will need immediate attention in any post-election lame duck session. And Kelly says now's the time to get the WERDA package done. The LOX system handles 60% of the nation's corn exports and almost half of its soybean exports at two-thirds the cost of rail. Well, Johanns has announced a replacement for Knight. U.S. Ag Secretary Mike Johanns has named a replacement for former Natural Resources Conservation Services Chief Bruce Knight, who was recently confirmed by the U.S. Senate as an Undersecretary of Agriculture for Marketing and Regulatory Programs. The new chief is Arlen Lancaster. According to USDA, Lancaster has served with the agency as Deputy Assistant Secretary of Congressional Relations since April of 2005, and before that, Lancaster served in a number of senior staff positions in Congress. He's said to have played a key role in crafting the conservation title of the 2002 Farm Bill. And finally today, the National Farmers Union held its eighth Farm Bill listening session yesterday. This time, Utah farmers and ranchers had the chance to sound off about the drafting of a new farm bill. Utah Farmers Union President Art Douglas noted that sky-high input costs have placed a heavy burden on farms across his state. He says input costs are always of concern since farmers do not set the price of their own products. Producers attending the Utah listening session also discussed the need for conservation programs. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM, working with the American farmer, creating products from his crops, creating markets for crops. ADM, resourceful by nature.
This is the Closing Market Report on AM 580. I'm Todd Gleason. In today's listener opinion forum, Shelby County Farm Bureau's Amy Rochkus calls hype hype and virtue a farm characteristic.
Remember when you could just have a delicious meal? Those days are over. Everywhere you look now, someone is telling you what to eat if you want to be a virtuous consumer. Consumers are urged to use their purchasing power to influence how food is produced. However, some of the advice that's out there isn't based on facts. One example is the Food with Integrity manifesto of Chipotle Mexican Grill. The fast food chain brags that its offerings go beyond fresh to include pork from naturally raised pigs from a select group of farmers. These animals are not confined in stressful factories. Chipotle trumpets on in-store placemats and on its website. It claims that its carnitas, a pork dish, tastes better because the pigs are free to run, roam, root, and socialize. There are consumers who are willing to pay more for food that validates a certain social status. Not only are they in the know about carnitas made from social pigs, but they also can afford boutique foods that appeal to their sense of virtue. They feel smarter and more successful with every bite. Being willing to sacrifice and pay more if one thinks it really benefits the environment or health or animal welfare is virtuous. But exploiting such beliefs in others without valid grounds or clear guidelines is far from virtue. It's misleading, and it's pure marketing. What is insidious about manipulating public perception for corporate gain is that so many consumers follow unsubstantiated marketing claims like sheep rather than learning for themselves how food is produced. If they did, they would be pleasantly surprised to learn that the perceived benefits of socially conscious food also exists in mainstream food production. For starters, farmers have embraced animal welfare standards that ensure their animals are healthy. After all, healthy animals are a better investment than unhealthy animals. Frequently, those who market under the guise of social consciousness are really only interested in making a buck. Consumers should get the facts about food production and think for themselves instead of swallowing false marketing claims. Then they could be virtuous and in the know. This is Amy Rochkus with the Shelby County Farm Bureau.
Amy Rochkus' comments are her own. They reflect her opinions. They do not necessarily reflect those of this station. We strongly urge listeners like you to become involved by sharing your views as well. To do so, call us at 217-333-0850. Well, up next, Crop Scouts on the western leg of the John Deere Pro Farmer Midwest Crop Tour traveled through the western third of Iowa yesterday. Pro Farmer will not release any official figures for western Iowa until Thursday, but Chip Flory, Pro Farmer editor and leader of the tour's western leg, says western Iowa corn yields appear to have been robbed by high heat toward the end of pollination.
The western one-third of the state is going to end up, based on what we pulled in our preliminary look at Iowa, looks like we're going to be a little disappointed with those yields in the western part of the state.
According to Flory, extreme heat has caused western Iowa corn to mature more rapidly than normal. which could reduce test weights. But Flory says it's a different story for western Iowa soybeans due to timely rains at the beginning of August.
I said this when we got done with South Dakota. I said it when we got done with Nebraska, and I'm going to say it again now that I've been through western Iowa. Do not underestimate the potential of a bean crop when it's got water at this time of the year.
The western leg of the John Deere Pro Farmer Midwest Crop Tour travels through southern Minnesota today from Worthington to Ottumwa, where the western and eastern legs of the tour come together tonight. Pro Farmer issues the final corn yield estimates and estimated soybean pod counts for Iowa and Minnesota tonight. Pro Farmer issues its overall estimate of this year's U.S. corn and soybean crop tomorrow at 1:30 Central Time. We'll talk with Chip Flory tomorrow afternoon when we tape Commodity Week at 4:30 Central Time. That program airs at 11:30 Central Time Saturday morning here on the station, but it will be posted as a podcast and to the website at WILLAG.org by about 6 o'clock tomorrow night. Bill Mayer of Roach Ag Marketing, and located in the Lexington Elevator, now joins us to take a look at the cash grain market. Hi, Bill. How are you doing today?
Good afternoon, Todd.
And what have you heard about the eastern leg of the John Deere Pro Farmer Crop Tour? It seems that they've been finding in Illinois and Indiana not the kinds of better than average, or at least better than last year type yields that they were expecting.
Yeah, I think some of the local ones that have gone out, we've seen some results from a few of the banks and elevators in the area, and you're finding some awfully good corn in some areas. You're also finding, you know, a lot of variation, it seems like, and it looks to me like the bottom line is whether you had that early rain to give you a little boost there to get you into that pollination, and also I think the earlier planted stuff, it seems to me like from what I'm hearing, is better than the later planted.
And as we take a look at the numbers, here's what they're suggesting Illinois yields will look like. And remember that USDA in August predicted a 172 yield for Illinois, or 173, one of those two. I don't recall which one it is. The average corn yield on the tour for Illinois at 149.32 bushels to the acre. That is up 15.9% from what they had last year. So they're finding better numbers, but not nearly what they expected to find,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, I think the USDA number is up about 20% compared to the 15.9, did you say, for the Pro Farmer Tour?
Yeah, they're up 15.9 at 149.32. So that could have an impact over the long run, not only on today's market, which I think probably it did, but over the long run might have an impact on where the bottom of this cash market might end up. How are things going there in Lexington?
Well, what we've seen here over the last week or so is we've seen some better basis levels on corn and beans at the processor. The river's fallen off some compared to, you know, after it made a pretty good move up, it's taken some of that back. Good export sales this morning. I mean, our exports just really seem to be coming right along, and I think that's going to help the basis levels eventually, but we have to get to the point where corn that's moving, regardless of price, quits moving.
And your bids for the day are?
On the nearby corn, it's 201, 204 for new crop, 510 for beans, 513 for fall.
We appreciate you being with us, Bill.
Thanks, Todd.
Yep, Bill Mayer is with Roach Ag Marketing out of Lexington, Illinois. He joins us here on the Closing Market Report. That happens every Thursday afternoon. Be sure, by the way, to drop by our website if you happen to want to pick up what Bill had to say or Dan's Wicker today, or a little bit later in the program, Peter Levitt. We record all of those and post them to the website not too long after the programs for the pre-opening, the opening, and the closing market report daily. And for Commodity Weekend, you can find all of them there as podcast as well at WILLAG.org. Speaking of Peter Levitt, we'll talk to him in just about 2 minutes. Up now, your regional newscast.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Jim Meadows. Michael Richards of Champaign is the Democrats' new candidate for Champaign County Clerk. The 27-year-old Richards was chosen by the party's Central Committee last night to replace Catherine Hogue, who is recovering from a recent stroke. Richard says if elected, he'd support the establishment of a bipartisan election commission independent from the clerk's office. Democrats also chose Matthew Gladney to run for a Champaign County Board seat in District 6. He replaces former County Board Chair Patricia Avery, who plans to run for a Champaign City office next spring. Illinois led the nation in monthly job growth by creating 29,800 jobs in July. And Governor Rod Blagojevich says that's because Illinois is offering more people better jobs by bringing in new companies and helping small businesses grow. The Federal Emergency Management Agency has turned down Illinois' application for financial help to deal with damage from last month's severe weather. The governor's office says it will work with the state's congressional delegation to appeal FEMA's decision within 30 days. The Illinois Auditor General says the Department of Human Services isn't checking to make sure the people who get federal grants deserve them. Auditor General William Holland's report today says DHS was late on checking the eligibility for 9% of the state's 368,000 Medicaid cases. Republican gubernatorial candidate Judy Bartapinka said last week that she could cut billions of dollars in state Medicare spending in part by enforcing eligibility requirements. Investigators today were back at the scene of a crash in Vermilion County, Indiana, that killed two police officers during a charity bike ride 2 days ago. They're trying to determine why a delivery truck did not brake for the bicyclists or their support truck. Funerals for the officers will be held next week. The Indiana Court of Appeals is shooting down that state's system for determining local support for schools to borrow money. The court says the process of obtaining signatures on petitions for and against the bond issue is unconstitutional because it only includes property owners. I'm Jim Meadows, AM 580 News.
I'm Todd Gleason, AM 580 Agriculture. We're unable to get hold of Peter Levitt, agricultural meteorologist, this afternoon, so in a moment we'll bring to you Ed Kieser's forecast. I do want to go back to the John Deere Midwest crop tour that Pro Farmer is out on the moment and bring you some of those numbers from Illinois. The average corn yield, as we heard already this afternoon, 149.32 bushels to the acre. That is up 15.9% from a year ago. Their bean yields were expected to be a little bit higher as well. Here's some things that they're saying off the website at agweb.com. That's agweb.com if you want to go read these for yourself. The scouts say they were a bit disappointed, and many expressed that disappointment as the results that they saw in the fields. Not that they weren't coming in above a year ago in Illinois, but mostly that they were not coming in as much above a year ago as many had expected, especially after seeing USDA's sizable increase as of August the 1st, and that they'd admit that they were surprised that the route that they took, which was through the best parts of Illinois, did not do so well, primarily in crop districts 1 and 4, and that they failed to find an Illinois corn yield over 200 bushels to the acre. So on all those routes across districts 1 and 4, not one corn yield over 200 bushels to the acre. The bottom line, they say, the Illinois crop may not be the beast that they had expected when they headed out on the tour. Chip Floria, Pro Farmer, will join us this Saturday morning for Commodity Week. Actually, joins us tomorrow afternoon at 4:30 when we record that. And you can hear it tomorrow night on WILLAG.org. We'll post the program as a podcast and an MP3 at just about 6 o'clock in the evening. Here's the weather forecast from Ed Kieser for the two-state region now. Tonight in the far north, mostly cloudy, some scattered showers and thunderstorms. Elsewhere, clear to partly cloudy. Lows will range from 62 in eastern Indiana to around 70 in the western part of Illinois. And tomorrow in the northwestern part of Illinois, Ed says, partly sunny skies, a chance of few showers and thunderstorms late in the day. Elsewhere, partly to mostly sunny, very warm and humid tomorrow. Highs will range from 85 in northern Indiana to 92 in the south. The extended forecast for the two-state region, Saturday, mix of clouds, some sunshine, scattered showers, thunderstorms, most numerous during the afternoon and evening. Sunday in the far northern part of Illinois, partly sunny, elsewhere mostly cloudy, some areas of rain, a few thunderstorms. Monday in the north, partly sunny, elsewhere mostly cloudy with scattered showers and thunderstorms. Highs Saturday ranging from near 80 in northwestern Illinois to the low 90s in the far south. Highs Sunday and Monday mostly in the 80s. Lows Saturday in the 60s and the 70s. Lows Sunday and Monday mostly in the 60s. Hey, one other note before I let you go for the afternoon. Remember to drop by the AgriGold tent At the Farm Progress Show next week, WILL will be broadcasting live from Amana, Iowa, and the Farm Progress Show. If you are making that trip over there on Tuesday, Wednesday, or Thursday, be sure to come by and see us in the AgriGold tent. You have a great afternoon. I'm Todd Gleason.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from First Midwest Bank, serving the banking needs of Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Chip Jorstad in Morris at 815-941-3706. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, and equal housing lender.